to Matlock, even co-starring with Peter O'Toole. But Lee Kessler claims that she got into Al-Qaeda's al-Zawahiri's mind and found out about the future attacks that he planned in both 2003 and 2004. Espionage is her thing in White King and her latest Doctor and White King Rising. Nice to have you with us, Lee.
Hey, Mary Jane. It's great to be here.
I cannot believe 9/11, 9 years ago already.
Exactly.
Have we learned anything?
Well, I think the American people are learning some things, but we've made some mistakes along the way as well. But, yeah, we're learning.
But learning what? Yeah, we had a fear. We all got together. We waved our flags, you know, for what, 6 months? Everybody had flags out and on their cars. And then all of a sudden, everybody forgets about it. You know, it could happen again, but maybe not in the same form.
Yes, and I know that the people in counterterrorism and so on are attempting to protect us, are constantly role-playing and identifying and trying to, how could we get hit again? But what you were talking about right there, that we got hit, it was an unbelievable wake-up call for Americans for a moment, and then we appear to have forgotten about it. That's what caused me to start on the journey that I went on with these books. It was the fact that we had forgotten and we were disuniting.
And not only disuniting, but it's the American way. Our attention span is what, a second and a half?
Well, I think the enemy's counting on that, exactly. And it's guided by media, which will put attention on an issue for a certain amount of time and then move on. So we've kind of habitually gone into almost a stimulus response on that. We'll put our attention and we move it off and we go where we're guided and directed. And I believe this enemy knows that about us. They know us well and they're using that.
People like al-Zawahiri are dangerous people. How did you get into his mind? I mean, you're not a psychic, so how you figured it out?
Well, fortunately, in my career in television, which was such a long time in films, through the years, I had the opportunity to play some real people. And any time you approach a character, but specifically if you're playing someone real, you can do a backstory research on them and pick up information. And at the same time, I was looking to see if I could figure out his driving motivation. When you get that right, if you're playing someone, you can justify everything they have done in the past, but you can also forecast, if you will, plausible things they would do in the future. So that's what I did. I just did a typical acting exercise that I would do if I were playing him or directing the actor who would play him, and then I began to identify things that were likely to happen if I had his driving motivation right. Then those things started to happen in real life. And I realized, oh my, I think I figured him out, and I could pretty much foresee types of things we were going to find ourselves getting into.
Interestingly enough, you surmised that possibly Osama bin Laden might be in Iran. And the heads are being scratched right now.
Yes, right out the gate in the first book, White King and the Doctor, I believed that Zawahiri moved bin Laden to Iran, and I kept him there in that book in a sort of a fascinating, because these are novels, but in a fascinating scenario of what's happened to him there. And then in the new release, White King Rising, he becomes a player in it as he starts to emerge and try to come back onto the field from Iran. Now it appears the intelligence community is indicating they believe also that he went there.
Hmm. A lot of people think he's still in the Pakistan area, just in the mountains. We can't find him. Hey, doesn't that amaze you? This guy is connected to a kidney machine and dragging that thing all over the country, or the world for that matter, and we can't find him.
Right. Well, I think that's our first clue. You know, I have one of those minds that says, what is wrong with this picture? And it's not that we're inept. The enemy has played it as if we're inept. I think it actually is. Now, where would he have gone, though, where he wouldn't be visible to us? And that's what made me pick Iran.
Okay. So where do you think he is today?
Oh, I think he's in an institution, in a quiet place in Iran, and he's totally under the control of Zawahiri, who has assumed control of al-Qaeda. That's my theory, if you will.
Really? So you think, Zawahiri, tell me a little bit about him. What is his background?
Well, he's the Egyptian doctor, psychiatrist, whose family has a long background in pharmacology. who was involved. He formed a terror group and when he was 15 years old in Egypt, was later involved with, even though he did not appear to be part of the attack that murdered Anwar Sadat, but he was imprisoned for that. And he formed Egyptian Islamic Jihad, and that was a terror group kind of like Hezbollah Hamas. But they merged, and he's very ambitious, this guy. He merged and found a way to get in up next to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and he's now regarded by the intelligence communities around the world as the mastermind of Al-Qaeda. So that's why I started with him, because he's the top dog.
But, so was Osama bin Laden merely a figurehead?
Yes, in my opinion. He's a great recruiting tool. He was charismatic. But the mastermind who's directing policy and calling the plays, if you will, is Zawahiri. And the Israelis had tried, Mary Jane, to warn us about him back in the 90s. They had indicated they felt he was the most dangerous man on the planet, and if we ever got him in our crosshairs, take him down, because they could never figure out what he was going to do. That's what challenged me to see if I could, using a different set of expertise.
Doesn't it amaze you, Lee, that with all the potential that we have in this country, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, they can't get to these people to take them out. And I almost feel like, I'm from South Chicago. I know some people in South Chicago who probably could have done a job for half the price.
Yeah, they probably could. I think if they could get in and be accepted where they are, I suspect that these enemies are using an age-old military tactic of hide in plain sight. And, some of Hitler's crew did that for decades. So we're not the first to experience this. And when I myself have gone on the FBI site and looked up some of the guys, when I look at them, I go, my Lord, they look like about 900 people that I met in Los Angeles,
Yeah.
And I go, oh.
They all look alike, right?
Well, they don't all look alike, but it would be very easy for them to hide in plain sight, especially amongst good people who are not by nature constantly looking for evil.
There you go. Well, they know how to play the game. They're good actors.
Yes, they're brilliant at it, and brilliant dramatists, and they have studied us and our history, and I believe that Zawahiri knows what moves we will make. That's why the whole plot of the fiction that's interwoven and inspired or based on actual events has to do with chess and moves that he's making, and the two heroes trying to figure out what he's doing and how the games are linked and interconnected, because he has figured out... In my opinion, he's waging a mind control and economics warfare. And we're falling for the religious and military stuff, which is in there, but it's not the major thing.
Just look what's going on right now. I mean, this stuff with the mosque in New York and the pastor in Florida who wants to burn the Quran. And it seems to never end.
Right. But anytime you find us doing something kind of contradictory to our own values or us fighting with each other, especially if the debates or arguments aren't really rational anymore, they're just emotional and knee-jerk response, you've got a mind control guy in the mix, and that's Zawahiri's background.
They use it against us. They use our values and our freedom against us.
Exactly. In fact, that was the story of the first book, of their plan to take our strengths and turn them into weaknesses so that we would succumb basically under our own undoing. That's the whole mystery and story of these things. And that's the thing you just spotted, is that it was our strengths, but now if used improperly, they become our weaknesses.
So what do you think Al-Zawahiri's next move is going to be?
Well, in the book that's out now, I pretty much laid it out that he has moved and they're starting to stage south of our border, forming an alliance with the drug cartels, Cuba, Venezuela, and they will move on Mexico. Now, and we were aware of that happening now. The book came out 10 months ago, but yet I think it was this week the Secretary of State has now stated that she views that situation down there as an insurgency. So he's going to move in that direction. I believe that he is planning a doomsday scenario, which will involve his background in pharmaceuticals and chemicals. And that's the story of White King Rising, and I hope to heavens that we stop that before that happens, because the other things are proven true.
Are you saying here?
Yeah.
Another
country? Yeah, it'll be here.
It'll be here.
Yeah, it will be here.
What are you doing with the other countries? Trying to form coalitions?
Yes, because the nature of Al-Qaeda is different terrorist organizations can all operate under their own banner, so to speak, but still we label them kind of as Al-Qaeda. But even within Al-Qaeda, the cells operate independently. That was the thing that he brought to the table in terrorism, that instead of it being a central command where the orders go down only from the top, and where every player kind of knows every other player and they know the hierarchy, that's not known in Al-Qaeda except at the top levels. The cells operate independent of each other, and no cell knows what the other cells are commanded to do. So if one is caught, they can't compromise the other cells. This is a very difficult thing to try to get your hands on. And even when you catch one cell and take them down, you still don't know who else is operative, and they can't give you any information because they literally do not know. Now, that was a great shield that he put in place there, if you want to look at it from the point of view of the enemy.
And this is not a war anymore. I mean, this is just a constant threat, because there is no set. They don't wear a uniform. There isn't a country that we go after or fight. There isn't a line set up. They're all over. We don't know where they are.
Right. It's I'm having to learn myself terms like asymmetrical warfare and fourth generation warfare now that the books have kind of caught with the military and intelligence community, that we have a mindset of what war looks like to us. And for a while, and there are times when we will be engaging in a war that looks like that. But for the most part, this is being played against us a different way. It is an erosion of a system, a takedown of a group. His goal, I believe, like most totalitarians or most people who want to dominate, is just the ending of freedom, because what we represent, what we stand for, flawed as we may be, is not the point. It's bottom line that we are a cause of freedom that has spread freedom. That has to end or be knocked down and made ineffective if someone who wishes to dominate wants to rise to power. And so it's a different type of enemy. It's being played out within. That's the story of the second book, that it's about education. It's about our cultural values. It's about the family unit. This is an old Soviet strategy he's using.
So they're not really fighting a religious war. It's a power war.
Yes, in my evaluation, it is. Now, they can use religion as a great recruiting tool, because it's fairly easy for them to get young men to be willing to die for religion, and, you know, that's part of man's history.
That's what amazes me. How they can persuade someone who's born in this country, raised in this country, and usually educated very well in this country, to turn like that. But all I can think of is, you know, they make promises to them as a power play, and that's it.
Yes, and they appeal to certain goals that that person might have. I can tell you that almost invariably drugs will be in the mix, and I don't mean street drugs. There are ways of starting to exercise a mind control. The Fort Hood shooting is an example of that, now classified as a terrorist act. Oddly enough, the second book describes how Zawahiri would go about creating that type of terrorist that would normally be a normal person, educated, functioning well here, and all of a sudden they turn into a terrorist.
How many
and,
Manchurian candidates do we have walking around?
It could be quite a few.
See, that's what scares me.
Yeah,
it
should.
There is a way to control minds. And you know, we looked at the Manchurian candidate as being, oh, well, it's just a movie, it's just a theory. It's not a theory.
Oh, no, exactly, Mary Jane. The artist will be out in front. And in fiction will usually be ahead of fact, because the artist can bring creative imagination. And so that movie was more than just a movie. But also, if you look at the recent movie Blood Diamond, about the situation in Sierra Leone, and not only the genocide there, but those child soldiers, and there are still 200,000 of those child soldiers, as I understand, roaming loose. And those were little kids who were just normal, loving little kids. They were snatched, and in a highly specialized training, which is all detailed in the plot of my books, those little children, within 24, 48 hours, are converted into stone-cold killers.
Holy smokes. And to think that that's possible to do any place.
Yeah.
If it would happen in Sierra Leone, I can understand it happening there. Mm-hmm. I can understand it happening in other countries. What amazes me is that it's happening in our own country.
Right, that's the Trojan horse. Something was inserted here long ago, which is, if you will, dropped out of the belly of that Trojan horse and penetrated education, church, military, justice, family. And on a gradual line, we have embraced it more and more and more, and to the point that we're a bit under its control now and can't, we don't have quite the reasoning ability. I would categorize it that we're being dumbed down and drugged up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. Now, what do you think about this whole thing with the mosque in New York?
Well, my personal view is twofold. Number one, they may have a legal right to do it. If you have a legal right to do it, you have a legal right to do it. But I was raised by parents who taught me, and I've tried to live a life, that just because you have rights doesn't mean that you can avoid your responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And that with a right comes a responsibility, and that to my mind, if that group was being really responsible, they would keep in mind our feelings, our concerns, not to mention the symbolism of what it means to the enemy on the other side. Even if they're naive and innocuous and really want it to be about tolerance of religion, that's a very Western, very American point of view, but it's a symbol to an enemy with a different point of view that they can use against us. But I would just say, guys, that is like the most insensitive thing you could have thought to do, and that's your best case scenario. Your worst case scenario is that it's an enemy action.
Just watching Ralph, you know, the one who's basically behind this whole thing, saying, oh, I want to bring people together for peace. Can't he see what is doing? It's tearing everybody apart and causing strife that has never been caused before. And he's saying, I just want peace?
Right.
What kind of peace are you bringing with all this turmoil?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the divider. See, they're really good at it, aren't they? I mean, as we look over the last 9 years, this isn't the first of these where we almost look at it and say, did I just go into Alice in Wonderland or something? I mean, yeah. The reactions are hysterical.
If he really wanted to do a peace movement and he wanted to do something in that location, what he could have done is you build a center that has no religious services at all. And then everybody is represented there. You have a room that's for the Hindus, a room for the Christians, a room for the Jews, a room for the Muslims. Let it be an educational thing. Everybody
yeah.
goes there. You can learn about these other religions, but everybody's in one building, but no services.
That's a great idea.
Another place for your services.
That's a great idea.
You know, then I would say, well, maybe the guy's got a good idea here. But he wants services, and oh, we'll accept anybody. Yeah, if you go by their rules.
Right. Well, also the original name on the mosque. I think Americans just really don't understand not only the other culture, but certainly the enemy. That at times with that culture, when it conquered, it always erected mosques. But also to name it after something where there had been a conquering, whether it was intended or not, I can absolutely guarantee you that the opposition there over in Zawari's camp are probably doing handstands saying, wow, did they give us a PR tool here that would enable them to embolden the young men even more and recruit even more? See,
what I'm afraid... Oh, excuse
yeah,
me.
That's okay.
What I'm afraid might happen is that they're now spurring things like what happened in Florida with this pastor who wants to burn a Koran. Now, there are people and groups all over the world that have burned Bibles. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened. Now, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. He has a right to do that, too. If you have a right to burn the flag, you can burn the Koran, you can burn the Bible, you can burn that. That's what the freedom of this country is. How do you feel about him? Do you think he's being insensitive or perhaps kind of flaming the fires?
I just think he's being kind of a knee-jerk reaction, and his emotion has overtaken him there, because one does not need to burn a book in order to have your values still be embraced and carried forward. The route out is through understanding, not through destroying every written word. And of course, that is symbolic in our past of tremendous intolerance. And it may, again, if you look at this as being a propaganda war, that would be a guy absolutely now giving a propaganda victory to an enemy, because it looks like we're undermining our own very values here, where we don't like it that flags are burned or books are burned. And but my Lord, we don't need to go back 1,000 years into the time when they torched everything written and known. I mean,
Or reminds me of the movie Fahrenheit 451. Just burn all the books, and then people can be stupid, and you won't have to worry. Just tell them what to do.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that bothered me is sponsoring Ralph by the State Department to go around the world to preach his word.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of actions being taken where you just look at it and go, where did this come from? Who would think of that? Who would even think that was a good idea?
You know? It's like I'm a common folk. I'm not a politician. I don't run any big, huge corporation or anything. And I thought, that's the stupidest thing I've in my life. I don't understand it.
Well, I think that's probably the message to all of your listeners and to all of us in America. Look, we can either just sit here and grumble about that, or we can kind of get, you know, whatever happened to some folks, we're going to have to step up to the plate now. We're going to have to get smarter. We're going to have to be more awake, because our common sense and our own innate understandings of things appear to be more productive than a lot of what's taking place by those who have the authority to execute it. And that's across the board, not just in the terrorist activities or the war on terror. I think this is the time for the American to resume responsibility for his own country.
I mean, we don't have enough problems in this country, you know, with housing and the economy and the recession and all that. We've got to pile it higher and deeper as we get into a religious conflict. And that's basically where we are.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a predictable one. You know, if you look at it from an enemy's point of view, they can say, if we could sucker America into a religious thing, also if we could re-inflame the racial issues.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, in other words, their goal, it's an old strategy, divide and conquer. And as whenever I look around and I see Americans divided on issues, I recognize there's an enemy action. I just wish that we had some folks that would stand up and say, "No, I know you're having this. There's room for debate, and I know there's room for argument, but never forget that we are engaged with an enemy who has the goal of, you know, taking us down, if not completely, of rendering us ineffective by destruction of economy, for example."
Isn't it amazing to you that we do not realize that we've always helped everybody else? And it's almost like countries probably have said, "Hey, let's lose to the United States because then they'll rebuild us after we're done." If there's earthquakes, if there's tornadoes, if there's floods, who puts out the helping hand immediately? We do. Now, we're having problems. Is anybody putting out a helping hand to us?
No, and it's not likely. I mean, this is where you learn that those actions we took are driven by our spirit, by our economy. We're able to do it and willing and wanting, and other people aren't necessarily willing to help. I think if we had a huge thing, countries would, and some would, and certainly in the war on terror, we had initial support there, and Great Britain stood with us because they understood the issues. But it is part of who we are. Of course, that's very threatening to an enemy, because whenever you do come with help that's true help, you win. That's how we won back Anbar province in Iraq. They were yapping all they wanted to, but ultimately those sheikhs saw the American soldiers rebuilding, implementing infrastructure, taking care of the people, and ultimately they said, "Zarqawi and his guys are out there killing us, and these guys are building our city," and it reversed it. So all this is reversible.
We just so stretched so thin. I mean, we, you know, we've got Iraq, and still have Iraq. You know, we pull the troops out. No, there's still 50,000 people there, troops there. I don't care what you call them; they're still there. We've got Afghanistan. You know, we've got troops spread all over the place. How many more fronts can we fight?
Well, I don't know. It started back in the 90s. Clinton was out on numerous fronts, and as long as the enemy pulls us into that, then we would get stretched thinner and thinner. But my theory is that that's the diversion. It's necessary sometimes. We have to go, or other people need us, and they are very cleverly using that to drain us, because there's never been a nation that prospers economically well during times of war. That's where the debt always increases.
Now, the book itself, Doctor and Rising.
The first book, White King and the Doctor, the sequel, White King Rising, they can go to whitekingrising.com or amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever.
Terrific. And your website again?
whitekingrising.com.
Terrific. Lee, this has been a pleasure talking with you. I hope you'll come back and visit again.
Oh, it'd be great to do so, and it's been my honor being with you.
Fantastic. You have a keep up the good work. We've got to keep stirring the pot.
Thank you. That's what I'm doing.
All right,
dear.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Checking it all out on Pop Off, that's just what we do. And I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Pop Off Radio Show today. Again, Hey, listen, all we can do is present it to you, and you got to take the ball and run with it. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, you dare to dream. Talk with you next time, right here on Pop Off.